Welcome to Ad Exchanger Talks, the podcast devoted to examining the issues and trends in advertising and marketing technology that matter most to you.
This episode is brought to you by Netmining, the leader in programmatic data-driven targeting solutions and guaranteed performance. To learn more, visit netmining.com/guaranteed performance.
Hey everybody, this is Zach Rogers. I'm the executive editor of AdExchanger and host of this program. Welcome back. I'm really pleased to welcome Jay Friedman to the studio. Welcome, Jay.
Thank you, Zach. Thank you for having us.
I love that booming hello. That's a nice, that is a good start. And even though he said us, I promise you, Jay is the only person in the studio.
Yeah, I'm the only guy here, but I feel like, I guess, representing Goodway in the industry, maybe.
You are. In fact, okay. I do feel like you are a great kind of steward and overseer, sort of sometimes babysitter of this industry. yeah. But I'm getting ahead of myself. Jay is the COO of Goodway Group, a provider of managed services primarily to agency customers. We're going to talk about what they do.
Yeah.
Jay has been a regular voice in AdExchanger's editorial coverage over the years, probably written dozens of columns, some of them sharply critical of blind spots, pain points.
The industry makes itself easy to be critical of.
Yeah. Yes, it does. Deliberate obfuscation.
Yeah. Come on, guys. It's not that hard. But yeah.
Apparently it is, though.
Yeah, it is.
We're going to talk about some of the areas he's written about and other stuff, too. So pleased to have you here.
Thank you.
Let's start with Goodway.
Yeah.
This is a company not based on one of the coasts.
Well, it's headquartered in Philly, right?
Okay,
so,
it is.
Yeah, so, okay. But really the coasts are San Francisco, LA, and New York, right? I mean, that's what people think.
I think we can grant Philly coastal status, but...
That's good.
Yeah.
I appreciate that.
So this is a company based in Philadelphia. It's not a young company.
No.
Founded in 1929.
That's it.
Still run by a family member.
Exactly.
Third generation, is that right?
Yeah.
Okay. I'll let you take it from there. What is Goodway?
Yeah, so let's the 30-second history. I mean, founded in 1929 by Milton Walk, and Dave Walk is my partner and the grandson of the founder. First, it was a printer, just strictly printing, and then they realized, hey, we can actually do marketing with printing, mm-hmm. you know, and then we can get into direct mail, for example. Mm-hmm. Well, direct mail is very data-driven. So I was a customer of Goodway's back in 2005, 2006. And I said, you know, gosh.
Where did you work then?
So I was at Young & Rubicam.
Okay.
And I said, gosh, you guys have really good data capabilities and really good targeting capabilities, and this is where digital's going. Mm-hmm. It'd be really good if maybe we could join forces and figure out a way to make something digital happen. And of course, in 06 is when programmatic really first appeared on the scene. Mm-hmm. And I personally uploaded ads into the Right Media beta and set the targeting and was like, how come whatever it was, guitarx.com is like the best site on here, you know? And it was interesting, but it was a little more rules-based bidding than RTB at the time. But and so we were the originals, one of the originals with programmatic and RTB. And now we're going on 12 years in that area. We've stopped the printing side. Of Goodway Group, so we don't do direct mail or any of that kind of stuff anymore.
Okay.
And so I think—
Any traditional media?
So no, we do anything that's biddable.
Okay.
Right? And so, but I think the family heritage, because Dave's dad was between the grandfather and the son, obviously. Mm-hmm. And, you know, you take this family values, family orientation, and one thing that Goodway's always been, and I think you referred to it as far as how I write columns and everything, we want to be honest, we want to be smart, you know, and that's kind of how we've come to this honestly smart digital mm-hmm. stance, because I think it's actually unfortunately differentiated from the industry to be honest and smart.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yeah.
Well, hopefully that's not the case as much going forward that it's actually—
We're trying.
I think that the industry is coming around to where you— have been positioning yourself, hopefully.
Yeah.
If I may engage in just a little bit of optimism. So who are your customers?
Yeah, so we have three business lines. So the first is what we call multi-location. This completely carried over from the print days where we service tier two and tier three oriented, which would mean franchisees or automotive dealers or owner operators.
Okay.
And co-op groups where they band together to pool their money.
Okay.
And so we have a really
specifically thriving, auto.
So there's a lot of auto. There's heavy truck and there's agricultural equipment, but there's also restaurant. And so it's any business where corporate wants the franchisees or owners to put a certain message forth within a controlled environment.
Okay.
And we help facilitate from both ends.
And that's co-op dollars, a lot of it.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Yep. So that's a thriving business of ours. We do a lot of work with that. The second, we work with regional agencies who otherwise prefer to use a different set of expertise and a higher level of expertise to run their programmatic.
Okay.
And that can be campaign by campaign, or in many cases, we are the programmatic arm. Mm-hmm. Of an agency, and we help with rate negotiation and clout in the marketplace and also providing tools and information to them that they probably otherwise couldn't afford on their own. Mm-hmm. You know, we spend $1 million a year in research to help enable the agencies that we work with to punch above their weight class.
Mm-hmm.
And then the third one, we do work with advertisers directly when they make the decision to not work with an agency.
Okay.
And so – we have, and that's a growing part of our business because, as you know, there's a lot of folks wanting to take things in-house, but what does in-house really mean?
Okay, great. Well, thank you for the summation there.
You got
it. Let's drill down for a moment on the agency customers because those are the ones I was the most familiar with previously.
Yeah, sure.
When you think about this type of an agency, regional, still has an interest in buying media, but may not be able to justify the cost of developing in-house capabilities. What's happening to that segment of agencies? Are they still strong? How do you rate the health of that group?
Yeah, so I think what agencies in this class, they need to make a decision. And they need to make the decision of what they are and what they provide to their customers. And there's a couple of things that they provide in general. So number one, they provide the strategy. And so I think strategy is underrated when it comes to programmatic because everybody thinks about the trading and the bidding and the platform. So, you know, we log into Facebook or we log into AdWords or we log into a DSP and that's complicated.
Mm-hmm.
But there is a significant amount of strategy before and after the actual bidding and buying is done.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and that can be around audience targeting. That can be around data application. That can be around optimization strategy. That can be around measurement strategy.
Mm-hmm.
So there's a lot of that. I think the actual trading or buying itself is like one of five or six components to it.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether or not an agency has an expertise in that is it's up to them. So that's one component. Number
is that
two,
something you do?
So we will provide any of those that an agency wants.
Okay.
We're more typically leveraged for the trading element of it. I think that DSPs are getting easier to use, right? So I think I wrote an article forever ago that was like, are DSPs too complicated for the average buyer? And I think at the time they were. At the time they were. Definitely not the case now. I think most DSPs are readily usable.
Okay.
By really anyone with good media buying understanding. And agencies, of course, are becoming more sophisticated. More people are learning how to do this. I think the challenge is, and we'll get to this a little bit in some of our differentiators, but DSPs are built for the mass market.
Yeah. Right?
They're built for everybody.
Mm-hmm.
And the reality is nobody is everybody.
Mm-hmm.
Not to be too esoteric here, but everybody has a special use case. And so when we work with a regional agency who has a hospital system as a client or a university as a client, the issue there is each client has very specific and differentiated needs. The DSP covers 80% of that.
Mm-hmm.
It's how important that other 20% is and how much of a difference it will make that determines whether or not we can be helpful.
Okay, great. Well, since you mentioned differentiators, why don't you jump into that? What makes you guys special?
Yeah, so I think first and foremost, DSPs are for the mass market. We've built on top of DSPs, and we've built our Real Value platform, which does really two things, if I can make it simple.
Mm-hmm.
Number one, it's pre-bid valuation.
Mm-hmm.
And so there's a lot of pre-bid fraud and brand safety applications out there. We try to build what the market needs, but the market doesn't offer.
Okay.
And so, yeah, we don't want to rebuild something that five other people have built. That's, to us, not where we go.
Mm-hmm.
But in paying the right price for the right impression based on essentially AI prediction of what that impression is going to be worth or the probability of a conversion or a sale,
mm-hmm.
Is something that's not really offered.
Okay.
All that well. And so and of course our differentiators change. We try to stay a little ahead of the market, and then I'm sure someone else will have heard this podcast and say, I got to build that. Mm-hmm. And that's great, and we'll continue to innovate beyond that as well.
How are you valuing those impressions? Is it based on user level data, or is it more based on the what you can gather about the impression or the media itself?
Yeah, so it's both.
Okay.
Right. So we know the user,
mm-hmm.
and then we also know here's the site and here's the time of day and the browser and everything else. And mm-hmm. we blend that together and we say, hey, just based on what we're seeing from this campaign, the probability to convert is X. And as a result, it's worth paying this. The other side of that, though, is that we know in working with SSPs that, hey, an ad on this site, we know where the floor prices are, the mm-hmm. you know, the multi-level floors.
Mm-hmm.
And we go, is it worth bidding at all?
Right.
Right, because each bid level has a win rate. And I think a missing area of the industry, for example, is not understanding that bidding 10 cents or 25 cents more in many occasions will not up our win rate.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes it's – you don't need 25. You need 30. Mm-hmm. 30 ups the win rate. 25 just makes you pay more.
Mm-hmm.
Identifying this and enabling us to win the right amount of impressions at the lowest cost
mm-hmm.
is a huge differentiator for us.
Okay. Great. So that efficiency thing.
Yeah.
Efficiency is not dead.
No, it's more alive than ever.
Yeah.
It really is.
Okay, good. I mean, it should be a good – you should be, you know, value-minded. Although we might talk a little bit about whether the industry became too focused on price. I think you believe that it did.
It became too focused on percent of working media dollars.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Yeah. Price to a degree as well.
Okay, well, we will get into that.
Sure.
But one more question on this sort of the pre-bid stuff. Are you bidding differentially per user, or is it more by segment? Okay.
It's both.
Yeah, okay.
So there are times where we don't know the user. I mean, someone gets a new iPad and
the
cross-device graph hasn't linked them yet or whatever. And so mm-hmm. So it's all predictive anyway in terms of the bid value. I mean, mm-hmm. it's based on probability.
Mm-hmm.
And so, but when we know the user, absolutely it's based on the user.
Okay. And then competitive set. You guys are a little unique, but who would you say you compete with the most?
Yeah. So I think it depends on the business line, mm-hmm. right? So in the multi-location business, there are companies out there that specifically work on that business,
mm-hmm.
okay? And there's a number of those. I think on the agency side, like you said, you're familiar with, you know, we find ourselves signing into the agency sign-in sheet after a Centro or a Viant or someone like that.
Mm-hmm.
And then I think on the other side, on the client direct side, you know, whether they've chosen to use an agency in a reduced fashion or not at all, I think the competition there is a little more akin to if you have a dollar and you go into a 7-Eleven, Snickers and Coke are competitors.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, they're different categories, but when you have limited funds, that's – everybody's competing.
Right.
And so I think in that scenario, it could be one of the folks I just mentioned, but it could be a consultancy or someone mm-hmm. like that as well.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
Yep.
So before we move into some other issues, we're going to take a real quick break, hear from a sponsor. Hello, I'm here with Dean Valiante. Dean is the president of Netmining, which is our sponsor on AdExchanger Talks for the month of March, and we're certainly grateful to Netmining and to Dean for that. Netmining, for those who don't know, is a subsidiary of Ignition One. Welcome, Dean.
Thank you for having me, Zach.
So for listeners who may not be familiar, what is Netmining and what do you guys do?
Sure, thanks. So Netmining is an audience targeting platform. We work with our marketers and agencies direct on building out audiences, building out a full cross-device solution, helping message to in real time to hit various goals across the space.
Okay, great. And when you say agencies, marketers, do you have a niche or what are your use cases?
Majority of the business we do on the net mining side is directly with agencies, both tier one holding company level as well as independents.
Mm-hmm.
And then we also do have some direct to marketer relationships, whether we're working directly through the agency or just straight directly with the marketer.
Okay, great. Talk about your priorities this year, next year. What are you guys focused on?
Great question. I think, we spend a lot of time thinking about, a space that's moving this quickly and rapidly, and sometimes it's hard enough to stay current, let alone innovate. So when I think about resources, we consistently spend in areas of data science, technology, and resource to support that, as well as human capital. We found that a lot of our success over the years has been the people and our ability to keep and tenured folks that we have on staff. So we'll continue to invest in those areas, as well as just figuring out how to stay current with our marketers and to mm-hmm. find ways of differentiation. So these are the key areas that we're focused on.
Okay, and you guys have something kind of new this year, or maybe it was last year. Net mining guaranteed.
Exactly.
What is that?
So it's actually interesting. It is somewhat new, as we're kind of calling it out differently, and I would say making an effort to productize it to an extent. But the reality is we've been doing things around guaranteed for the last 9 years since we launched a business. But what I found was, and I kind of took a step back and looked at things, was the industry and marketers specifically started to look at things differently. Finally, right? We weren't so focused just on click-through rate and some of the legacy metrics that were always in place. Things around brand safety were coming up. Things around completions and different metrics that purely weren't only click-through rate or just ROI-focused KPIs were coming out, and the team we have in place we're getting really good at working with our partners on that. So we decided to, as marketers took more reins and wanted more control and understanding of the programmatic ecosystem, we said, let's come out and frame it a little differently and allow them to partner with us and only really get what they want, right? And guarantee a level of performance. And that could mean many different things because, frankly, marketers have unique needs and demands, and when it came to guarantees, it could be a various mix of things.
Mm-hmm.
But things around viewability, things around brand safety, things around completion rates, or a performance e-commerce drive to store, or different metrics that we can really hone in on that are tangible to us, that we can go out and deliver to marketers and guarantee it, right? And mm-hmm. put them in a place where they don't have to pay for something that doesn't fit into that threshold.
All right. Good stuff. Thanks, Dean. Thanks for your support.
Thank you.
And we're back with Jay Friedman. So one of your kind of issues has been, quality and the industry's sort of fight to reduce waste, including fraud, non-viewable impressions, spoofed inventory, things like this. It's been a huge issue many people are intimately familiar with by now. But let's talk about the progress here, because I think we're in a phase where many marketers feel like they've done some of the really difficult hygiene work, and now, we're into a second phase where we're putting systems in place to maintain high standards. But how far along have we come? How much waste is still in the system, do you think?
So I think those that have made intentional efforts to clean up what they're buying
mm-hmm.
have come very far, and I think for those who either just disregard it or are focused on price and CPM, for example, or what appears to be performance,
mm-hmm.
I think those folks probably haven't made very much progress at all. There's a ton of it still in the system.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's clearly still – I mean, you can buy 50-cent inventory, and that's clearly not good inventory.
Mm-hmm.
But I think there are a lot of people who willfully disregard inventory quality because things are performing.
Or appear to be.
You were right.
Right.
Of course, they're not really performing.
Yes, right.
Yes.
Right. Who are those people?
So I think a lot of them are direct response marketers, performance marketers.
Okay.
I think if I'm a direct response marketer And I said, well, I just looped in ad network XYZ and never heard of them, but they say they have 1,000 sites that are all ComScore amazing and everything. And, and man, they're really performing. I would ask them, I'd say, forget ad tech for a minute. Forget marketing for a minute. How are you selling more of your product? Like, are you selling more of your product? Is more shipping out the door this month than it was last month? No. Well, then is it really I mean, because Lyft is all that counts.
Yeah.
And I don't think we're at a place where we measure Lyft most of the time. And we certainly don't do fair and proper attribution. I know we'll get to that. But yeah, I think we forget to look up. Like, we're so buried in our DCM reports or whatever it is.
Right.
And we forget to look up and go, wait, I'm not shipped. I shipped 5,000 units last month and I shipped 5,000 this month. It didn't really actually do anything.
Well, let's get into attribution now, because it's a natural transition from this issue. What will solve the problem of waste in programmatic media is better attribution systems that work, and maybe different business models for agencies. I'm not sure. I mean, if you got paid on actual sales performance, or companies like you,
I'd love it.
That might bring a real change in the industry.
Yeah, I'd love. So, I think an agency or an ad tech partner is essentially I think we should be treated like one of the largest salespeople for a company, right? So if I'm the CMO of a major organization and I've got an agency relationship or a consultancy relationship or whatever it may be, that is my biggest number one salesperson, right? So I've got salespeople throughout the field. You know, if I'm a CPG company, I've got salespeople who sell into the big box stores. I've got salespeople who work regional relationships. My biggest salesperson is my agency. And salespeople get paid on production, right? But agencies typically don't. They go through procurement. And so, yeah, I would love it. The challenge, to be fair to marketers and to the industry, is that it's really hard to determine what is what's fair compensation based on Lyft, because Lyft is really hard to determine. Now, we don't have a whole lot of trouble determining it. I think we've done a really good job for a lot of agencies and advertisers to determine it. But it takes effort, and it takes pre-campaign effort. And so that's why I think it's most challenging.
Just briefly summarize, what is that effort? What technology tools do you use, and what's the pre-work that you have to do to make sure you're prepared to measure Lyft?
Yeah, so there's a couple things.
That's not a small question.
Yeah, I was going to say, as I unpacked it in my mind, I had about three different angles I want to go to here, so I'll try to make them quick. But
sure.
So number one is the campaign has to be set up correctly, meaning the line items have to be associated with what we're measuring, right? So if we want to measure one creative versus another, we can't just rotate them on the back end and not measure it. I think that we have to hold aside a control group and a meaningful control group. It can't just be after the campaign is over, let's take a 10% equivalent of users who didn't see ads. Well, if they didn't see ads, it's probably because we didn't target them on purpose, right? And so it's holding aside a meaningful control group. I think, you know, the other thing is that multi-touch attribution is challenging. And that's really the second part of our real value platform, actually, is post-campaign analytics and multi-touch. I think what happens is, so there's no right answer to multi-touch attribution. There's 50 models, right, that can be used. And I have heard so many marketers say, well, I don't know the right one, and so we don't do it. And I mean, that's like saying, you know, I went to the store and I didn't know which Life Vest to buy, so I just went on the boat without one. and something's better than nothing.
Yeah.
And I think the other thing is, you know, there are attribution models that you know, create 30% improvement, 70% improvement, 80% improvement are right 60% of the time, 80% of the time. But if you get an attribution model that's right 80% of the time, and they go, yeah, but there's 20% where it's wrong. It, like, actually harms performance.
Yeah.
And I go, okay, so let's just say the attribution model was your default. Will you now turn it off to harm 80% of your inventory but to help 20? Well, of course not.
Right.
So it's a trolley problem.
Okay.
Right? But it's a trolley problem with advertising. There's no bodies involved.
Right.
This seems like a simple decision.
Yeah, well, people get into a decision paralysis, I think is what you're pointing to, where anyone who's shopped for, like, shampoo knows what this feels like. It's like, it's just like,
happened to me.
I need shampoo, but, and you walk out of the store with nothing. because you can't differentiate between them, and they have different price points and seemingly different features. So, I mean, I think that marketers have, many of them have gotten to a point where they realize they need to just decide and move through what can be a difficult evaluation process.
So I think you're right. And I think that not making any decision actually feels safer in some cases. But I think just like your shampoo analogy, it's better to pick one and smell okay.
Yes,
that's good. My new line around attribution.
I love it. Must credit ad exchanger.
Yeah.
So, okay, great. And then what about the fact that many MTA stacks or these technologies have been acquired by media or tech companies that may have skin in the game on ad sales?
Yeah.
You feel comfortable giving attribution business to Google, for example?
Well, I won't speak about Google or anyone directly, of
course. You won't?
No, I have an Android phone. I want it to work well, you know. I mean, not to speak about any individual company.
Okay, so well, let's say there's
Google, a lot of them.
Google owns Adometry, and then AOL owns Convertro, and
right.
Their Visual IQ has come off the market. I think that's still private equity ownership, but in any case, there are attribution tools available that are owned by a larger company that sells media. Is that okay?
Yeah, so anyone grading their own homework is not okay.
Mm-hmm.
And there always needs to be a third party. And that's not just around attribution, by the way. I mean, that's around when you've got a platform that's judge, jury, executioner, bailiff, and so forth.
Yeah. Sure.
I mean, when you're the SSP, the DSP, the publisher, and so on and so forth, that becomes complicated and probably not good.
Mm-hmm.
We've developed our own multi-touch attribution. The reality is,
it's your own tool.
Yeah.
You don't license an attribution tool. Okay.
No.
What do you license?
We license Bidder. For example, we license tech that where there's 50 or 100 of them out there.
Okay.
And we go, okay, this is somewhat commoditized at this point.
Okay.
So we license a Bidder, obviously license data warehousing structure. And mm-hmm. I mean, we've built our own within it, mm-hmm. but the environment. We've built our own pre-bid valuation. We've built our own MTA, our own analytics engine. Mm-hmm. Not engine, sorry, but mm-hmm. the algorithms around it.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Great. And I mean, what else on attribution? Let's talk about, I know you don't want to talk about specific companies, but Facebook is known for having sort of pioneered, they didn't pioneer it, to be honest, but they were the first company to really catch fire with a measurement system that links impressions to eventual conversions in a store.
Yeah.
Now, you could do this previously through like Yahoo and AOL.
Yep.
But most people just felt like it wasn't reliable from a measurement point of view, perhaps. But yep. Facebook gets a lot of credit because of their identity-based system. What do you think about Facebook's progress on this in this particular area of measuring sales and whether they deserve the kind of credit they've been given?
I don't know. I feel like Datalogix and other platforms have been doing this for, you know, I mean, not Oracle, obviously, but
mm-hmm.
I feel like there's been a lot of that.
Nielsen, Catalina.
Yeah, for a long time. Mm-hmm. I certainly don't, I mean, maybe they got the credit, you know, what is Edison's light bulb was the 23rd light bulb ever created or whatever.
Mm-hmm.
It's usually who makes it go mass market and who markets it better mm-hmm. that gets the credit.
Sure.
So that may be the case there, but I think, you know, with Facebook, it's a walled garden. And so do you think you're ever going to put a dollar into Facebook and it's going to come out looking badly?
Right.
Like in terms of how it measures, I mean, yeah.
And how do you respond to the walled garden measurement issues? Like what's your recommendation to clients?
I think we have to put money that we believe is meaningful into these platforms
mm-hmm.
for the value of the audience and the predicted value that we're going to get out of the other side. I mean, if 25% of the time spent on the internet is with Facebook or whatever, you don't ignore it. I think it's pretty simple.
Mm-hmm.
But every dollar that is put into a walled garden is going to look like it performed better than any other dollar.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Right. And so the measurement is simply not even close to being trustworthy because it's not being fairly measured and compared against anything else.
Do you think that's a widely accepted view?
No. No. In fact, I think that's a very contrarian view within the marketer space.
Mm-hmm.
I think that people get their walled garden reporting, and it says your cost per lifted sale was X, and they go, that's the Bible.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
that's
I love
the truth.
It. Mm-hmm. Okay,
yeah, because it's got a huge company's name on it, and they can take it to their boss, whoever their boss may be, and they can't get questioned.
Mm-hmm. Okay,
I mean, unless I was their boss, then I'd question them.
Yes. Well, it would be nice to think that's changing. Do you think it's changing?
No, I don't.
Okay.
Not from the last 50 conversations I've had.
Okay.
Yeah.
So it's one of these no one ever got fired for buying IBM kind of situations?
Hugely it.
Okay.
Because I think to go and say, listen, I want to use more of an open web approach. Uh-huh. And because I can't trust the walled gardens, I think you have a high bar to clear with, you know, if you're a CMO and you're talking to your CEO who doesn't know ad tech, mm-hmm. you have a high bar to clear. You know, and then the minute you have an earnings report that comes out that's less than stellar and they go, well, you know, they start looking into things to blame. It's like, wait, why did you reduce your spend with Google or Facebook or whoever it is? Mm-hmm. You know, it's just an easy link to follow, mm-hmm. even though it's probably false.
Right. Well, it feels like some smart marketers could dazzle their CEOs by telling this story you just shared about why trust is not well placed with these folks. Since it is a contrarian view, but I think it should be exciting to a CEO to hear because it's patently true.
So I think it depends on what stage, what like life stage a company is in. And so if you're a mature company with earnings reports and you're struggling to, you know, create that 5% year-over-year shareholder growth, I think that's scary.
Yeah. So while we're talking about the relationship between CMOs and their bosses, let's talk about yet another column that you wrote.
Yeah.
It's like a walk down memory lane with your greatest hits,
yes!
Jay.
Yes!
Which was calling for a day of clemency.
Yeah.
So that everyone can admit their mistakes vis-a-vis fraud, non-viewable, invalid impressions, and other types of malfeasance.
And taking hidden fees.
And taking hidden fees.
That's like 90% of it.
Okay.
Yeah.
So taking hidden fees or paying hidden fees when you didn't know you were paying them. I mean, that's another example. If you're the marketer and you've been wasting money, you know, then telling your boss, yeah, we screwed
up. Exactly.
You know.
Yeah. Everybody has to, top to bottom, we all have to say, we've learned and going forward, it's going to be better.
Right. So a great idea.
Thanks.
I think it's going to remain an idea, though.
I absolutely think that, by and large, it remains an idea.
Yeah.
This is not going to catch fire.
Right, right. The way it works is, you know, if a company CEO, a company that was taking some of these hidden fees steps, the CEO steps down, new CEO comes in. That makes it easier to issue a mea culpa. And that's happened in some corners of ad tech. You got a new CEO who's like, not going to deny it, and just important that our customers know we're doing things a little differently going forward, and then their stock price falls, and then everybody moves on.
Right. So I think it starts at the marketer, though.
Yeah.
Right. So, I mean, they're the ones paying the bills ultimately, mm-hmm. and I think if I'm a CEO of – if I'm a CMO or CEO, let's just say, of a marketer, I would absolutely put this in place. I would say, listen – I want it all to stop because we're better going forward for it. Mm-hmm. It doesn't matter what's happened in the past. We can't do anything about it, mm-hmm. right? We can do something about the last 30 days maybe and go back and get some refunds or whatever. But, like, really, that's not a big deal. Mm-hmm. What I want to know is that we're making the best decisions today that help us over the long term. And so I would say to my CMO, I don't care what's been happening. I want to know, right? You're not going to get fired. Nobody is fired. The agency doesn't get fired, but I want it to stop. Mm-hmm. Now, what that involves is also saying, I want my CMO to tell the agency, based on this, I just need to know what you need to be paid fairly, mm-hmm. right? Because if you've been taking hidden fees, then your regular fees weren't enough.
Mm-hmm.
So just tell us what fair pay is. We'll go there for now.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. And then we'll see if you're worth it.
Yeah.
Right. Let's talk to the SSPs and the DSPs and let's parse this out because we're going to follow every penny because I think – and gosh, I didn't think I was going to mention blockchain on this, like, you know, but
let's do it.
Whether or not blockchain, certainly no cryptocurrency stuff, that's irrelevant. Whether or not blockchain is it, there is going to be a way in the future to follow every dollar,
mm-hmm.
right? And to have serialized money essentially where you can look and see where it ended up. And so we're going there. So if I'm a CEO, I'm like, well, let's not wait until that happens, right, where I get a report that tells me the ugly. I'd rather just say to everybody, let's stop it and let's figure out where you need to be paid. In a DSP, if you need to be paid 3% higher but to cut all the crap, that's okay.
Yeah.
Now we just need to make sure you can prove your value.
Okay, great. Well, I hope you're right.
Let's say out of this podcast, if we can get three CEOs or CMOs to do this, write in. Write to Zach.
Write to me, CMO. If you're doing this, I will tell your story. We'll bring you on the show.
Yeah. I'd like to meet him.
Or we'll just talk privately.
Yeah, whatever works.
Yes. There are cookies involved. You'll get cookies.
Yes. Can I get a second copy of the calendar?
Oh, yeah. I brought one for you.
Thanks.
All right, cool. We're going to move quickly. We're running out of time. So I want to move quickly through a few different things. It's going to be a lightning round.
You got it.
10 words or less on each of these topics. Amazon is a duopoly contender.
Absolutely. And I think 10 years from now, it will not be a duopoly like it is today.
Thank you. Consolidation in advertising technology. How far has this come? Has it come far enough? Exchanges in particular, SSPs?
Yeah, no, not at all. There should be no more than 10 SSPs.
Okay, great. Ad prices. Rising.
Rising for real inventory. So we have to remember we started 15 years ago where we were paying $15 a thousand to our local news station or whatever. And that was overpriced. It was a false market. And then RTB came in and more than leveled it, right? And now we're just getting back to an equilibrium.
Mm-hmm. Okay, great.
And that equilibrium is rising from where it's been.
Okay. Let's see. What else? Advertising technology evolution. How much... Is ad tech robust enough right now?
Yeah, I think
is the primary innovation cycle concluding?
So, yeah, I'm not going to be the guy from the patent office in 1899 that said everything that's been invented has been invented. but I will agree with you that the major wave of ad tech innovation, phase one, has concluded. I think it's much more about refinement going forward. I mean, I'm sure there will be some disruptions, but I think we've experienced significant disruption as opposed to refinement. Refinement's more important now. And so, that's who I would bet on going forward. And that's going to be tough because disruption creates exciting business models for VCs to get involved in and big acquisitions. Refinement's not as exciting.
Do you see a strong future for independent advertising and marketing technology, or are we going to be stuck with the situation where people are buying tech from media companies?
No, I think that there the ability for a strong independent couple companies, but that's the key is couple companies, is
mm-hmm.
there?
Mm-hmm. Okay, great. What a great discussion. Thank you so much, Jay Friedman, for coming into the studio.
You got it. Thank you for having me.
And thank you, listener, for tuning in. We'll see you next week.
Next week, tune in to hear more from Netmining's president, Dean Valiante. Produced by Bigfoot Music and Sound in New York City.